By the end of the week, Smoke figured that all the new hired gun slicks that was coming in were in. And the names were impressive. One-Eyed Shaw, Curly Bob Kennedy, Stu Lee, Purdy Wilson, Phil Dickerson. There were other lesser-known gun hands as well, but all were good at their trade. Del Rivera had ridden in, looking about as old as God, but still rawhide tough, nimble, and very, very fast on the shoot. He owned a ranch down in Wyoming, the D/R brand, but when a friend was in trouble, Del buckled on his guns and saddled up for the ride. And it was rumored that Buckskin Devers was on Clint's payroll. If that was true, Clint had sunk to new lows, because Buckskin was just about as sorry as any man who ever lived. There was nothing he wouldn't do. Smoke personally knew some of the gun hands that Clint had hired, and felt that if he could talk to them, a few might just pull out. With that thought in mind, Smoke rode into Blackstown one week after Judd Howes had pulled out and Bronco Ford had been named foreman at the Circle 45. The hitch rails in front of the saloon were lined with horses, some with brands Smoke had never seen, many wearing the Circle 45 brand. He paid a visit to Harris Black before heading for the saloon.
I was hoping my eyes were deceiving me, but I might have known you couldn't stay away from a fight.
Actually, Harris, I came to town to talk to some of those men over there. I know a few of them.
So you convinced two or three of them to ride out? My brother will just hire more. What will you have accomplished?
Why do I get the feeling that you're not in a real good mood?
I got 15 hired guns belly up to the bar over at the saloon. The word I get is they're under orders to shoot any Double D rider they see. I can't prove that, but that's the word I get from several sources, including the bartender, who's so scared of my brother he'd walk on fire before he'd testify to that in any court of law. Now you ride in just as bold as brass and tell me you're going over to that saloon to talk to some of those tanked up hired guns. You're right, Smoke. I'm not in a real good mood.
Who's over there, Harris?
I don't know all of them. But I did see Tall Mosley, Little John Perkins, and Paul Stark. I spent half the morning sending out wires to sheriff offices all over the West. There isn't a warrant out for any of them, except for Buckskin Devers, and he isn't about to show his face in town.
Sheriff, I don't want a lot of bullets flying around the main street of town. If you tell me to haul it out of here, I'll leave without a word.
I can't do that. Hell, I won't do that. I tell you what I will do. I'll walk over there with you. It's right at noon, and a cold beer would taste good before I grab some to eat.
Well, let's do it.
The two men pushed open the bat wings and stepped inside the saloon, walking shoulder to shoulder. Once inside, from habit, they moved apart. The place was filled to overflowing with gawkers, ne'er-do-wells, gamblers, and hired guns. Smoke leaned against the wall and surveyed the situation through cool eyes, his gaze stopping at Tall Mosley.
Been a while, Tall.
Several years, Smoke. Down around Boulder Creek, I think it was.
That's right.
Smoke shifted his eyes to Little John Perkins.
John?
Well, Jensen, you finally stuck your nose into something that you can't handle, didn't you?
Oh, I wouldn't say that, John. I'm still here.
Paul Stark turned and put his back to the bar. He stood smiling at Smoke.
Ain't seen you in 2-3 years, Jensen. You looking prosperous.
I'm well.
Your family?
They're fine.
I heard your wife is here.
Out at the Double D.
I've been looking forward to this ever since I first laid eyes on that wife of yours. First I'm gonna shoot you dead. Then I'm gonna fuck your wife until she comes.
Shut up, Paul.
A few of those who had witnessed the blinding speed and deadly accuracy of Smoke Jensen would finish their drinks and ride on. No amount of money was worth dying for. Tall and Little John and the others now knew how fast Jensen was, and several of the smarter ones knew he had come to town to show them. If it hadn't been Paul Stark, it would have been one of them. The eyes of the hired guns widened as the bat wings were pushed open, and Huggy Charles and Del Rivera stepped in. These men were living legends in the West, right up there with the old mountain man preacher. These two old gun handlers raided up there with Smoke Jensen and Louis Longmont, Johnny North and Earl Sutcliffe, and the Mexican gunfighters Al Martin and Carbone. What the hell was this pair of old rattlesnakes doing here?
We always miss out on fun.
Well, maybe it's for the best, dear. Man gets to our advanced age, too much excitement ain't good for him.
A Circle 45 hand stood in his way. Huggy gave him a shove that nearly put him to the floor.
Get the hell out of the way, boy! Ain't you got no respect for your elders?
Who you think you're shoving around, you old son of a bitch? Oh, why, you son of a bitch!
No, Will, that's Huggy Charles!
Who the hell is Huggy Charles?
I'm Huggy Charles, boy. Man ought to know who killed him.
But I can't die.
That's what you all think. But me and Huggy no different. Like Jensen here. A month from now, not a soul in this town will remember this boy's name. 6 months from now, the wooden cross will have begun to rot. A year from now, his gravesite will be known only to God. Or the devil.
That's a hell of a thing to say to a dying man.
What do you want me to say? Congratulations?
Doc Garrett pushed in and knelt down beside the dying gun hand. He looked up at the sheriff.
Not a chance.
But I can't die. They said I was fast.
They lied.
Smoke walked to the bar and stopped by Tall.
Get out of this one, Tall. Go on back to where you came from.
You got a couple old gun slicks, 10 or so punchers, and you're telling me to pull out? You ain't got that many friends, Jensen.
The bat wings were shoved open and two more men walked into the bar.
Oh, hell!
Al Martin and Carbone, the Chihuahua gunfighters, walked to the bar. Smoke smiled at the expression on Tall's face.
You think Bronco Ford is the only one who could send a telegram, Tall?
Martin dropped a hand on Tall's shoulder and spun him around.
You and I, amigo, we have differences to settle between us, no?
Tall stiffened. He didn't want to pull on Al Martin, even though he knew he was just as fast. Because just as fast wasn't going to get it. Both men would have lead in them. And standing 1 foot apart, the wounds would be hideous. The bat wings pushed open again. Two of the most disreputable-looking men anyone had ever seen in a long time walked in. They both looked about 10 days older than water. They were dressed in buckskins except for hat and boots. Both wore bright red sashes around their lean waists with pistols tucked behind the sashes. They carried Winchester rifles, the 73 model.
What the hell is that?
Puma Buck and Lee Staples. You boys have heard of them, I suppose.
Heard of them? Hell, they've been dead for years.
With no wasted motion, Puma laid the butt of his Winchester into the hand's face.
I'm a long way from dead, lad. You put a hand on that short gun and I'll kill you.
Fuck you, you goddamn...
Puma stepped over the man Huggy had left on the floor and walked to the bar, shaking hands with Smoke. He smiled at Tall, but there was no mirth in his eyes.
This one I helped raise. Me and a whole passel of other mountain men. Get out of my goddamn way!
Tall's eyes widened in shock. No one talked to him like that. But he moved away, stepping lightly, his back still to the bar. This crazy, wild-eyed old man scared him. Tall knew to leave old folks alone, for they had very little to lose and would kill you in a heartbeat.
Another time, Tall.
Martin turned his back to the gunfighter and extended his hand to Puma.
I have heard of you for years, and I am honored to finally make your acquaintance. I am Al Martin, Mr. Buck. And this is my compadre, Carbone.
Please, boys. I've heard of you. You come up here, help my boy here?
Your son?
No, not no blood kin. But a bunch of us mountain men sort of adopted him when he was a tadpole. Any man who's an enemy of Smoke's is an enemy of mine. And I'll kill any man who lifts a hand against him. I'll shoot you in the back. I'll shoot you in the front, but I will kill you.
Just wait a minute. I'm sheriff here, and I...
We don't give a damn who you are. We don't believe in waiting till a rabid skunk bites us before we kill it. And don't even think about giving me no lectures. I don't take kindly to them. I'm somewheres around 80 years old. You think I really give a damn what you or anyone else says? 50 years ago, I probably peed right here where this building is standing. Probably leaning up against a tree before folks come in and cut them all down. Now, You go run along and tend to lost dogs and treed cats. We'll handle this.
Harris stood utterly speechless. Puma looked at a young rider standing at the bar.
You work for the Circle 45, boy.
Sure I do. Hired on a couple days.
Now, you hear me, boy. Playtime is over. I talked with some Injuns over on the Divide a few days ago. They told me that this here Clint Black, who owns the Circle 45, had hired men to kill Smoke Jensen. Is that what you hired on to do, boy?
I reckon so.
Well, you're a young man. You're entitled to make a mistake. I did a time or two. So I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm not going to kill you. Get up. Walk out of here. Get on your horse and ride. Don't ever let me see you within 100 miles of this place while this little war is waging. Because if I do, I'll kill you on the spot. You understand all that?
Yes, sir!
Now get! Anybody else here work for the Circle 45? If you do, make your peace with the Almighty, because you're dying today. Lee, you step on outside and get ready to shoot anyone who tries to mount a horse wearing a Circle 45 brand.
None of the Circle 45 hands made any attempt to move toward the door. They didn't doubt to a person that Lee Staples would shoot them down like a rabid animal if they went anywhere near a horse wearing Clint Black's brand. Smoke cut his eyes to Tall Mosley.
See you around, Tall.
Yeah, bet on it.
Smoke walked out of the barroom then, followed by Al Martine, Carbone, then Huggy and Dell. Puma was the last one to leave, cautiously backing out, a wicked grin on his face. Harris came out to the boardwalk a moment later.
Think I won't shoot you if you interfere?
No, Puma. I don't doubt it for a second.
That's good, Sheriff. Because me and Lee is going to bring this here little pimple to a head. And we got a few more surprises to spring on you.
I can hardly wait.
Of course, your no-count brother ain't going to like it a bit.
You gun my brother down without it being a fair shooting or any other man in my jurisdiction for that matter, you'll face murder charges.
And you think you be so keen with the high country, you think you can find me out yonder in the lonesome?
No, I imagine you could lose yourself back there and I'd never find you. I'm just telling you what the charges will be, that's all.
I think you're a good man, Sheriff. Took you a while to come to that, from all that I hear about you and your no-count brother. But you made a clean break. Now, you ponder this bit of advice. Don't confuse bravery and duty with foolhardiness. You just sit back and concentrate on catching chicken thieves and foot patters. Stay out of our way. And if you're thinking about trying to arrest any of us, from Smoke Jensen down to me, think again. 'Cause it ain't gonna happen.
I'll do my job. This is not 1830, Puma. It's halfway civilized out here now.
If it was civilized, men like your brother would be rotting in a grave instead of harassing decent folk.
You break the law, and I'll arrest you, Puma.
You'll never do such of a thing.
Harris turned, stepped off the boardwalk, and walked to his office.
What other surprises do you have in store, Puma?
Those few hired guns who had ridden their own horses into town rode back to the ranch to get any horse that didn't have a Circle 45 brand on it. They had taken Puma at his word, which was wise, for the old mountain man had meant what he said, Sheriff Black or no Sheriff Black.
He what?
Tall repeated what Puma had threatened.
He meant it, boss. That old man wasn't kidding. I gotta get some horses for the boys back in town.
Oh, go on, get 'em. I should have guessed something like this would happen. I'll be glad when those old coots are all dead. But Al Martine and Carbone? I can't figure that. They were after Jensen not that long ago.
They switched sides. I know the story. Martine and Carbone stopped hiring their guns and went to ranching down in Mexico. Got them a right nice spread, so I hear. Call it the MC. And believe me, they don't have no trouble with rustlers or bandits.
Get the horses for the men.
When Tall had left the room, Bronco went and sat down in front of Clint.
You really think that crazy old coot will shoot anyone riding a Circle 45 horse?
Oh, yes. But I got horses with every kind of brand you can imagine. and I have bills of sale for him. That's no worry. Let's walk outside to the porch. Stuffy in here.
The rancher and foreman stepped out onto the porch.
Shit! Those damn old coots brought friends with them!
Tall Mosley and a few others caught in the corral could do nothing except stay low in the dirt, crouch behind whatever cover they could find, which was precious little.
Crawl back towards the door. We can make the house.
A hand came galloping in from the range, and he went galloping back out as long-barreled Springfield rifles with a range of over 3,000 yards began barking at him. One knocked his saddle horn off, and another blew his hat off his head. He laid down on the horse's neck and got the hell gone from there. The old mountain men on the ridges then began making life miserable for those in the house and the hands in the bunkhouses. Stovepipes were knocked loose and windows were shattered. Doors were soon rendered useless as the lead knocked out great chunks of wood. Outhouses were riddled with heavy caliber lead, and the horses in the corral screamed and reared and panicked and knocked down the gate. They went thundering out the open range, away from the frightening gunfire and the howling bullets. Back in the town, the Circle 45 hands sat in the saloon and wondered when in the hell Tall and the others would get back with the horses they could ride out on. Not a one of them even remotely considered attempting to mount up on a horse wearing the Circle 45 brand. Smoke, Martine, Carbone, Huggy, Dale, Puma, and Lee were waiting across the street from the saloon, waiting and watching and smiling at the plight of the hired guns. Harris Black and his deputy sat on the edge of the high boardwalk in front of the sheriff's office.
It's coming to a head, Sheriff. We ought to stop them people over there. They're gonna make them gunnies mad and there'll be a killing.
Not this day there won't. Those boys over there in the saloon aren't fools. They know that if they opened up on civilians, they'd be slaughtered in 2 minutes. Smoke and those mountain men and Mex gunslingers would shoot that place to splinters and pick their teeth with what's left.
Farmers and riders for other small spreads came into town, saw what was going on, and immediately turned around and beat it back to their places, telling others of the events taking place in Blackstown. By early afternoon, that town was filled up with onlookers. Out on the Circle 45 range, the old mountain men were rounding up the horses and driving them out of the country while others of their kind were having fun riddling the house and bunkhouses with rifle fire. Up to now, no one had been hurt on either side. Then, the firing abruptly stopped. The hired guns looked at each other for a moment, then slowly began getting to their feet. Most of them veterans of dozens of range wars and shootings, they sensed the sniping was over, at least for this day. The Circle 45 hand walked his horse into the corral. One arm was bloody, and he looked ragged. He was helped from the saddle just as Clinton Bronco walked up.
Old men. Looked like they was all older than God. They rounded up the horses and drove them off. I tried to jerk iron on one of them, and he shot me just as cold as could be. Told me to tell you that you wanted this war, you got it. Now what the hell are you going to do about it?
Who were they, Tim?
Boss, I don't know. I never seen none of them before. They's all dressed in buckskins, and they was old. All of them old men. They look like them drawings of mountain men.
That's what they are. They've come out of the caves and hidden cabins up in the High Lonesome to help Jensen.
Son of a bitch!
Scoundrel and murderer that he was, Clint was still a man of the West, and he knew what this development meant. There had never been a breed quite like the mountain men. They were, for the most part, solitary men who could go for months without seeing or speaking anything other than their horses. They would brook no nonsense from any man, and if they were your friend, you had a friend for life. But if you were the enemy, then they would shoot you on sight and do it without hesitation. Clint became aware that his hired guns had fallen silent and were all staring at him.
But they didn't get all the horses. Saddle them up and go to the East Range and round up those over there. They haven't been ridden in a while, so they'll take some topping off. Tim, you and Donovan hitch up a couple of wagons and go into town and get those men trapped in there.
In a wagon, boss?
Well, you got a better idea?
No, boss, I reckon not.
Then get moving. Rest of you start picking up and repairing the damage. I gotta think.
It was an embarrassed damn bunch of gunslingers who climbed into the bed of those wagons for the bumpy ride back to Circle 45 range. None of them made any effort to retrieve whatever possessions they might have had in the saddlebags or to get their rifles in the boot. Doc Garrett talked briefly with Tim and Donovan, and after the wagons left, he walked over to the sheriff.
Somebody attacked the Circle 45 headquarters and run off all their horses. It really shot up the place bad. No one was killed, but a hand took a round in the shoulder.
The sheriff looked in Smoke's direction.
Hey, don't look at me, Sheriff. I don't know a thing about it, and I'd swear on a Bible I had no knowledge of it.
I believe you, but this little stunt just might be the final straw for my brother. You best brace yourself.
Harris looked around. Puma and Lee had vanished.
Now, where did those two old rowdies go?
I have no idea. I didn't send for them. They don't work for me or the Double D. They've lived a long, rich, full life, Harris. They'd rather go out in a blaze of glory. And they damn sure don't take orders from any man.
Yeah, noticed.
Later that evening, Sally and Smoke sat alone on the front porch of the twins' house.
You think Preacher sent them, Smoke?
I'm not even sure that Preacher's still alive, Sally. I think he is, and living in the home for old mountain men and gunfighters. No, I think these old boys just heard the news. They couldn't wait to jump right in the middle of a good fight.
I wonder where they are right now.
The old mountain men? Oh, they're gathered around a little hat-sized fire, boiling coffee and searing fresh-killed deer, or maybe one of the Double D steers. They're laughing about what took place this day and figuring out how best to stir up some more trouble tomorrow. Don't worry about them. They've been taking care of themselves since long before you and I were even born.
But they're old men, honey. They're in their 70s and 80s.
And they're still tough as rawhide and mean as a just-woke grizzly. Sally, those old boys are having the time of their lives. They're giggling and cackling like a bunch of schoolboys right now. Oh, they've got aches and pains from rheumatism and the years of badly set broken bones and the like. But this is fun to them. They've got something to do now. They feel a purpose to their lives. I hope none of them get hurt or killed. But if they do, they went into this with their eyes wide open. I've lived with mountain men, Sally. I know the type of men they are. I'm part of that breed. Don't worry about them.
Oh, bastards!
Tall sat on his bunk cleaning his guns. Little John Perkins smiled.
I hear you had your chance at some of them this day. And Al Martin, too. What's the matter, Tall? You have a change of heart?
It ain't over yet. And was I you, I'd watch my mouth.
Shut up! Both of you! We're riding tonight. We're gonna hit the town and burn it to the ground.
This is dumb play. Nobody ain't no never treed no western town, and we're gonna get the crap shot out of us for attempting it.
We're not gonna treat it. Just burn it to the ground.
Well, how?
With fire.
Clint's got all that worked out. Stop worrying so much.
Yeah? So tell me this, Bronco. We burn the town to the ground. Where we gonna get supplies and food and whiskey? Huh?
Shut up, John. Nobody wants to listen to your thinking. These folks are getting too uppity for Clint's tastes. We burn them out, and then they move on. We rebuild the town and we fill it with folks who'll show some respect for the Circle 45 hands. Get your dusters and your masks. Let's ride.
But Clint's plan turned out to be a not very good one. Had he halted the thunderous drum of hooves a mile from town and sent men in small teams, they could have easily burned down the town. But instead, paid gun hands galloped up to the bridge, stopped, lit their torches, and then roared into town. Hell, by that time, the townspeople had armed themselves and were waiting. The Circle 45 men got the crap shot out of them. They made only one pass through town, and Bronco hollered at him to head for home range, taking the long way around to get there. There were six men dead in the dirt, four more wounded, their torches burning brightly on the ground beside them. Several buildings were set on fire, and that delayed the forming of a posse while the fires were extinguished.
No point in going after them, Sheriff. We all know who ordered it. They'll just alibi for each other like they've always done. Tomorrow, will put signs up at both ends of town. No Circle 45 riders allowed in town. We're not going to sell your brother any more supplies.
Do whatever you want to do, Hanlon. It's fine with me.
And from now on, we all go armed at all times. Sveed over at the blacksmith's is going to start sawing barrels off shotguns, starting at first light. We've had all we're going to take, Harris. Any trouble starts, we're shooting.
All right, Hanlon, I guess it's way past time.
Harris walked away. He turned up a darkened street toward a small house.
Is he still alive?
Smoke talked to Doc Garrett the next morning. A deputy had ridden out before dawn to tell him the news, and Smoke had ridden back into town with him.
Oh, he's hanging on. I've done all that I can do. He took two slugs in the chest. 45s, I think. One passed right through, and the other lodged. I dug it out. He has not regained consciousness.
He's a good man, Doc. The community would feel his loss.
Yes. It took Harris a time to see his brother for what he really is. But he came around and tried to do his best. They shot him down in the dark from hiding. I doubt that he'll be able to add anything to that, if he ever regains consciousness.
You're not from the West, are you, Doc?
Nope.
I've seen men soak up a half a dozen 45 slugs and stay on their feet and kill the man who put them there, and then go back on to live to be old men. It's a tough breed out here, Doc.
Well, Harris's breathing is evened out. He's got a chance. That's about all I can say.
Tall Mosley hasn't.
What on earth are you talking about? Has there been another shooting?
One is about a minute or so away. Al Martine rode in with me, and there's Tall stepping down at the saloon.
What is it between those two?
They just don't like each other.
Smoke walked out to the street and leaned up against an awning support post. He rolled a cigarette and waited. Tall turned and faced Martine, who was standing on the boardwalk across the street.
What do you want, Greaser?
Satisfaction, you son of a puta!
Doc Garrett stepped out.
I know what that means.
Yeah, very uncomplimentary.
I'll kill you for that.
Then try.
Tall grabbed for his gun.
I told him a long time ago that jerking both guns was going to get him killed someday. Cut your speed down just a tad. Oh well, anyway, it's one less.
Al turned around and went into the general store to buy some candy for his sweet tooth. Smoke looked up and saw 10 riders were walking their horses slowly into town. Smoke had already recognized Danny O'Brien and Yukon Golden. As they drew nearer, he could make out Slim King and Grub Carson. He wasn't familiar with the others.
What do they want?
Me.
And you're gonna do what about it?
Meet them.
All 10 of them?
Well, in a matter of speaking, yeah.
Smoke looked across the street toward the general store. Al Martine had just stepped out and was standing in front of the store, sucking on a piece of peppermint candy. He pointed up the street, and Smoke cut his eyes. Carbone was riding in, and Smoke could tell by the tenseness of the man's body that he was quickly sizing things up. Smoke nodded.
Get up to those deputies, Doc, and tell them to clear the streets. Quick now. Those gunslingers are hunting blood, and they're liable to start shooting at any moment.
Smoke trotted down to the saloon and slipped in through the back door. The bartender saw him and near about had a heart attack. This barkeep was about the most timid Smoke had ever seen. He put a finger to his lips, shushing the man, and moved to a corner of the room, near a table that was shrouded in shadows. He loosened his guns. Donovan and a hired gun from over Kansas way named Lessing entered the bar. They failed to see Smoke standing in the shadows. Tom Clark, George Miller, and Ed Burke faced Al Martine. Carbone was walking up the center of the street toward Danny O'Brien and Yukon Golden. Slim King and Grub Carson had slipped down an alleyway looking for Smoke.
Say, you boys want a drink?
Shut up! If we want a drink, we'd ask for one.
Lessing looked around him, his eyes finally picking out the shape of a man standing in the gloom.
Who the hell are you?
The Grim Reaper.
The what?
The Pale Rider.
Don't give me no lip, boy. I want a straight answer.
Lessing stepped away from the bar and walked slowly towards Smoke.
Oh, shit! You're smoked!
Donovan quickly pulled his pistol. Out on the street, guns were roaring and men were dying. Smoke picked up Donovan's gun and shoved it behind his belt. Slim King pulled open the storage room door and cautiously stepped into the saloon, both hands filled with guns. Grubb was right behind him, holding a sawed-off shotgun. Both of them saw the bloody body of Lessing. Smoke gave him no warning. He just lifted both 44s. Reloading, Smoke carefully avoided the mess by the storage room door and walked out the rear of the saloon.
Oh, shit.
A slug knocked out chips of wood by Smoke's head. He flattened against the wall, then edged back in the direction he'd come and slipped under the saloon, hoping he would not disturb any rattler who might be seeking shelter from the hot sun. He worked his way around toward the front of the building, and after carefully checking the rear of the alley, he slipped out near the mouth and stood for a few seconds, watching the action in the street. Yukon's back was to him.
Hey! Yukon!
The gunfighter spun around and stood up. Smoked carbone fired as one.
How many left?
Two, I think. Clark and Miller. They're down near the smithy shop.
The bastard stole my horses!
That's it then.
Smoke walked up to where Tom Clark lay in the street. Ed Burke lay dead a few feet away. Tom was still alive, but not by much. Smoke knelt down beside the mortally wounded gun hand.
If you have anything to say, you better say it quick.
Go to hell.
I am thinking you will be there before us.
You the one that shot me, Martin.
I did, I think.
You go to hell, too.
All in due time, Pistolero. But I have friends down there you might look up and say hello.
Oh, motherfucker, it hurts.
The two deputies walked up, Doc Garrett with them.
Harris just opened his eyes. When all the shooting started, he said Smoke Jensen must be in town.
Three of Clint Black's hands disappeared while out rounding up the last of the horses. Horse and rider just vanished. No trace of them was ever found.
Them old men got them. They're camped all around the edge of the range, brazen about it, too. They don't make no effort to hide their cook fires. They're daring us to come get them.
Hell with them. They're not our main problem.
Clint was still shaken by the news that eight of his best gun hands had gone face down in town. Now it looked like his brother was gonna live, and that irritated the hell out of him. Everything was going sour. He just lost two more of his hired guns. They had saddled up and ridden out. Didn't even ask for their pay. Just left. What made matters even worse was not a single reply had been received on his latest bid to hire more men. No one wanted to tangle with a dozen or more living legends. Including the cook, he had 26 men now. At one time, Clint had boasted he could field 75 of the toughest hands in the territory. Now he didn't have a single working cowboy left. Not that it mattered, for he had personally ridden his range and found that he didn't have a steer left. They'd all been rustled, probably by the mountain men. His house and all the outbuildings were in a shambles from hundreds of rounds being pumped into them. The roof's all leaked now. He couldn't find any workmen to repair the damage. No one would work for him. And he had even put ads in the hell in a paper. Clint sat in his den, his thoughts dark. The Double D was now in good shape with a large herd and at least 15 tough, seasoned hands to maintain it. Clint and his men had been banned from ever setting foot in Blackstown, the name of which had now been changed to Canyon City. It was his town no longer. Clint was under no illusions about facing Smoke Jensen, the one person he blamed for all his misfortune. He wasn't as fast with guns as the man, and he didn't think he could take him in any type of stand-up fistfight. Any reasonable man would have called it quits and tried to make peace. But Clint Black was not a reasonable man. He rose from his chair and looked out a bullet-shattered window. He could almost smell the odor of defeat. It was not a smell he liked.
God, I hate you, Jensen. I despise you.
Clint did not know what to do next, but he did know this. He was going to kill Smoke Jensen. He just didn't know how he was going to accomplish it.
I think you ladies are reasonably safe now. Unless I completely missed the mark, I believe. Clint has shifted his hatred to me. Sending those 10 gun hands into town this morning tipped his hand.
Then you feel we could safely ride our own range, Smoke?
As long as you have a couple of hands with you, Tony. I know some of those old mountain men are watching your range. I've seen their smoke.
The smoke?
Indian talk. They're out there. And remember this. You've got 12 pretty salty old boys on the payroll now. And that's plenty for a spread this size. And they're good men. Clint, on the other hand, has been losing men steadily. He can't have more than 25 men on his payroll right now. And none of them can tell the difference between a steer and a buffalo. I know gun hands. When they start sensing defeat, they'll pull out. And I'll bet that right now it's pretty darn glum over at the Circle 45 spread.
What do you think Clint will do next?
I wish I knew.
Harris Black lay in the bed at the doctor's office and watched Clint's remaining hands buy some supplies and head out of town.
My brother's little empire's falling apart. Couldn't happen to a more deserving person. He fooled me for a long time, Doctor. He lied to me, and I believed him. And when I finally began to suspect him, I still believed him. I just couldn't. I wouldn't believe that my own brother would lie to me. I was a fool.
What do you think Clint will do next?
I don't know, Doc. But he'll go out with a bang. You can bet on that.
Clint had strapped on his guns and gathered his men on the grounds around the front porch.
From this day on, I'm paying triple wages for the men who stay with me to the end. And the $5,000 bounty still stands on Jensen's head. You're gonna leave me, do it now.
The gun slicks looked at each other and shuffled their feet and whispered amongst themselves.
I reckon we'll stay, boss. But we want a month's wages in advance. You might get killed and then we'd be stuck.
That's fine with me. Line up and draw your advances.
What's the plan, boss?
I don't have one. And I'm sure open to suggestions. Whatever we do, we gotta leave the ranch on the quiet. Those old mountain men have ringed us. But I still think we could take those old farts out.
Ellis, Jones, and Hardin had that same idea. You seen them since they rode out?
Only their horses.
That's right. Only their horses, boss. I'm gonna say something that you ain't gonna like, but here it is. Those old men out yonder in the hills don't have no job or work they got to return to. They can stay here forever. And if Smoke wants them to, they will. Sooner or later, probably sooner, one of them will get a clean shot at you. And it'll be over.
Go on.
We got 23 men able to sit saddle, and that includes you. We're not going to win this war, so you might as well put that out of your mind.
I'd already reached that conclusion.
So you want...
to kill my enemy.
Smoke Jensen?
Yes.
The twin sisters?
Once Smoke is dead, they can be dealt with.
Puma Buck and Lee Staples stopped by the Double D late that afternoon and swung down from the saddle. They declined the invitation to come inside the house. Neither of them much liked houses. They sat on the porch and accepted coffee and donuts.
Clint Black lost 3 more men this day. They buried one and 2 rode out with white handkerchiefs tied to their rifles. We let them go. It's getting plumb boring on them ridges. The boys want to attack the house and get done with it, Smoke.
No. As much as I hate Clint Black, I want all the men who will to just go away and leave us alone.
Bad move, Missy. No telling what Clint might do. Situation like it is, he ain't predictable no more. He just might shoot you both on sight. Me and the boys will stay just as long as it takes. We got no place to go and nothing to do when we get there. We're living off Circle 45 beef. We rounded him up and moved him over to that valley where you always ambushed. He ain't got nary a steer left. All he's got is some mangy hired guns and a heart full of hate for Smoke. He can't get no supplies. We got the road watched all the time.
I don't think he can hold out too much longer. You boys keep up the sharpshooting, Puma. It's taking its toll on those guns of his. He's losing 1 or 2 every day. He's got to crack soon, and then it'll be over. I think I'll just heat up the fire a little bit.
Every time you get that look in your eyes, I start worrying.
Oh, don't worry. This isn't gun talk, honey. Excuse me, folks. I have a letter to write.
Everyone looked at Sally. She shrugged her shoulders.
Don't ask me. I'm just his wife.
Smoke returned in 10 minutes with a sheet of paper. He handed it to Sally.
Sally, how long would it take you and Tony and Jean to write out about 50 or 60 copies of this?
Sally read the short letter.
Not long. Come on, girls, let's get busy.
The next morning, Bronco brought a copy of the letter to Clint's study. He had found it tacked to the main gate of the complex.
Says here he posted this thing all over the country. I'll be the laughing stock of the territory, son of a bitch.
You sure will be if you ignore this. Did you read down at the bottom?
No.
If you don't meet him, he's gonna mail this to every paper in the territory. He's calling you out, boss. You ain't got no choice in the matter. If you don't meet him and slug it out, you might as well ride on out of the country. You know as well as me how Western folks are.
Old Clint knew all right. Clint knew well. He took the letter and reread it.
This is an open challenge from Smoke Jensen to the murdering, raping, ambushing, night-riding, yellow-bellied Clint Black. I say you're afraid to meet me in a stand-up fist fight. You hide behind hired guns and do not have the courage to meet me and fight it out man to man. I'll be waiting in the main street of Canyon City at noon on Saturday. If you fail to show up, then everyone in the territory will know exactly what kind of craven coward you really are.
Clint lifted his eyes. All his hands already knew about the letter. And he knew that if he didn't meet Smoke Jensen, he wouldn't have a hand left. They'd ride out, showing their contempt for him. The rules were few in the West, but they were enforced rigidly. And if a man was called out by another man of approximately the same size and age, you went, or you got on your horse and you rode out. No one in the rugged, wide-shouldered West would tolerate a coward. Clint was between a rock and a hard place, and he knew it. He slowly folded the paper and stuck it in his pocket.
Well, Bronco, looks like we take a ride come this Saturday morning.
Of course, Clint had far darker plans than just a fight on his mind. But those were quickly dashed when One-Eyed Shaw told him the mountain men had left the Circle 45 range and had taken up positions all around the Double D ranch and grounds. His plans of burning the Dugan twins out while all the Double D hands were in town watching the fight were tossed out the window with that news. Then he thought he might have a sniper shoot Jensen during the fight. But on this Saturday, all guns were to be banned in Canyon City. Every man would leave his gun checked at gun points at both ends of town. And Harris had ordered all able-bodied townsmen to be sworn in as special deputies, and they would be heavily armed.
Jensen don't fight by no rules. He fights to win. He'll offer no mercy, nor give no quarter.
Clint nodded his head in agreement. Since he had made up his mind to fight, he had not taken a drink of anything stronger than coffee. He knew he was in excellent physical shape, for he had always been vain about that. He was strong as a bull now and had knocked men unconscious with just one punch. But could he whip Smoke Jensen? He didn't know. He would have to rely on good fortune and lots of bobbing and weaving and ducking and try to wear the man down. But he had to win. He had to. Everything was at stake. If he lost, he would be a humiliated and broken man in the eyes of all the people. He could not allow that to happen. One way or the other, by hook or by crook, he had to win.
He's a bull of a man, Smoke. Strong and can punch like no man I ever seen. He'll gouge your eyes and use his boots on you if he gets a chance. I saw him cripple a man like that. He likes to hurt people. Really likes it. He's a cruel brute.
Thank you, Waymore.
Smoke wasn't particularly worried about Clint Black. He fought bigger and better men than Clint and stomped them flat into the ground. During the time between the challenge and now, Smoke had cut out tanned leather and made himself a pair of gloves. They were almost double the thickness of ordinary gloves and would enable him to hit harder and also protect his hands. Connie had just returned from Canyon City.
Lots of bets on this fight, boss. Folks coming in from 70 miles away to see it. The papers in Helenhuff sent reporters in. They wanted an interview with you. I told him I didn't have no authority to speak for you.
The fight will be an interview that'll speak for itself.
Yeah, you get a good night's sleep, boss. Tomorrow's a big day.
I assure you, Connie, I'll sleep like a baby.
Don't nothing bother you, boss?
No point worrying about things a man can't change, Connie.
Huh. I reckon not. Good night, boss.
Smoke ate only a light breakfast the morning of the fight. Sally and Tony and Gene had prepared baskets of lunches they would eat after the fight. Baked beans and huge sandwiches and fried chicken and jams and jellies.
Aren't you worried? I would be positively beside myself with dread.
No, Tony. I've seen Smoke fight before. Oh, he'll have a busted lip and a black eye and some bruised ribs and various other abrasions and contusions. But he'll win and he'll be alive. Smoke fights coldly, you see. Never loses control. It will be very brutal, ladies. I doubt that you have ever witnessed anything like it before.
Although neither of the twins would admit it, they were both kind of looking forward to the fight. Canyon City had swelled to 10 times its normal population. People were coming in from as far away as 100 miles. Entire families had shown up, bringing picnic lunches and planning to make a day of it. Enterprise and store owners along Main Street had rented out roof space for spectators. Bleachers had been hastily knocked together, and Main Street was blocked off. Street vendors were peddling everything from beer to banners. Clint Black and his men rode into town and checked their guns under the watchful eyes of regular deputies and newly appointed special deputies. A special elevated bed frame had been built in the show window of the general store so Harris Black could look over the heads of the spectators and watch the fight in comfort. The sheriff kept his pistols handy because he suspected the fist fight would only be part of this day's events. His brother didn't enjoy losing at anything. Smoke and his party rode in. They stabled their horses and checked their guns.
Keep the Double D people on one side of the roped-off area and the Circle 45 rowdies on the other side.
The arena was a simple one. Ropes had been stretched from one side of the street to the other so the men could have plenty of room to maneuver. Smoke took off his spurs and handed them to Denver, then pulled on his leather gloves. He walked to his side of the ropes. There were no rules to this fight. It was kick, gouge, and stomp until one of the men was down and could not continue. Smoke slipped between the pulled tight ropes and walked to the center of the ring.
Come on, Clint! Let's get this going!
The deputy stepped back and leaned against the hitch rail as Clint walked into the ring and up to Smoke Jensen.
This is one for the boys you killed in that valley, you child-killing son of a bitch!
Clint scrambled to his boots, his face dark with anger, and his eyes blazing with wild hatred. Clint jabbed, and Smoke flicked the blow away from his face and drove a left straight in. Clint swung, his fist caught Smoke on the shoulder. Smoke ducked, weaved, and hammered at Clint's kidneys. Smoke followed him, relentless in his pursuit.
I'll kill you! I'll beat you to death, Jensen!
I doubt it!
Smoke kicked the man on the kneecap. Then he stepped in and busted the man's mouth with a left and a right. Clint charged in, swinging wide. Smoke saw what the man had in mind and ducked. He grabbed the thick wrist with both hands and turned his body, throwing Clint to the dirt. Clint bored in, smashing blows to Smoke's face and body. Smoke blasted a right into Clint's belly. Then Smoke hit him hard on the side of the jaw. Smoke did not let up. Smoke grabbed the man by the hair and jerked his head back, and standing over the fallen rancher, drove his right fist into the man's face half a dozen times. Smoke released his hold on the man's hair, grabbed him by one arm and jerked him to his boots. Holding onto his arm, Smoke threw him across the street. Clint slammed into a hitch rail and it shattered under his weight. Clint crawled to his feet and ducked his head into a watering trough. Then he came up and charged across the street. Those standing by the ropes heard the man's jaw shatter. Clint was poleaxed to the ground. He didn't move. Slowly, Clint rose to his knees. He reached into a boot and came out with a knife.
God damn you, old fucking son of a bitch. I'ma fucking kill you.
The bullet took Clint in the center of his forehead, stopping the man and flinging him backward into the churned-up dirt of the street. He lay with his arms outspread, the blade of the knife twinkling in the midday sun. Harris Black had fired through the window of the general store. The crowd stared at the dead Clint Black. That rancher had possessed everything any man could ever want, but Clint had wanted more. And all that got him in the end was a bullet in his brain. A ruthless man's reign of terror had ended. It was over. The hired guns, now out of a job, stood and listened to Harry's words. The words were familiar. They had heard them all before. The gunslingers were surrounded by 50 heavily armed and grim-faced men.
You got 1 minute to clear out of this town. And don't you ever show your faces around here again. At 1 minute plus 1 second, we all start shooting. And no, you don't get your guns back. Now move!
30 seconds later, the pounding of hooves was fading into memory. Harris Black motioned for Harry to come into the general store. He handed him the deputy sheriff's badge.
I'm through. When I get on my feet, I hope I never have to use a gun against another man as long as I live.
Smoke, Sally, and the three Sugarloaf hands stepped up into the saddles and looked at the crowd, watching them. The townspeople filled the street, standing in silence.
We'll never forget you.
The sisters had tears in their eyes as they watched the riders fade into the distance. Swede the blacksmith tossed a shovel full of dirt over the dark, bloody spot in the street where Clint Black had lain. He walked back to his shop and picked up his tongs. The undertaker's hammer could be heard, nailing the coffin lid shut on Clint Black. The old mountain man and the famed gunfighter slipped quietly back into memory. Felker, at the feed store, hung a sign in his window, open for business. The last depositor at Clint Black's bank withdrew his money, and the manager shut the door, hanging a closed sign in the window. Two traveling salesmen riding in the stage passed the five riders heading south.
Say, that was Smoke Jensen.
Ha, that's balderdash. Smoke Jensen is just a myth. He doesn't exist.
Well, maybe you're right. There's Blackstown up ahead. Say, look at that sign. The name's been changed. Canyon City. Well, I'll be darned. I bet there's a story behind that.
Smoke Jensen, the Mountain Man 10, Courage of the Mountain Man, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 1991, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2010, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Published by arrangement with the Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Mort Shelby, James Lewis, Terrence Aselford, Elizabeth Jernigan, Dylan Lynch, Bryn Casey, Nanette Savard, James Konachek, David Coyne, Tim Getman, Joe Brack, Michael Glenn, Christopher Graybill, Johann Detweiler, Thomas Penny, and Ken Jackson. Additional Boot Hill Boys by the Dead Giveaway. Adapted and directed by Johann Detweiler. Produced by Dwayne Beeman and Richard Rowan. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johann Detweiler. Original music composed and performed by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Courage of the Mountain Man, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. And be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man, Blood Bond, The Last Gunfighter, Eagles, and Sidewinder series. All available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now, keep listening for exciting previews of other graphic audio titles. We appreciate it.
Who's there?
You do not know me, King Daniel Brock Ursel, but you know of me. I am Father Abbot Markwort of the Abelican Order.
How can this be? How did you get past my guards?
Why are you so surprised, my king? You have witnessed the miracles of the gemstones. You are aware of their potential. Does it surprise you that I, the leader of the church, can make such contact?
I warn you!
No, my king. I am the one who issues a warning. The arrangement in Palmaras goes quite well. Bishop Dionero's work has been wondrous, and the city is functioning more efficiently than even before the war. Whatever threats the Baronese might spout, whatever the complaints of foolish merchants, the course of Palmaras has been determined. You will do nothing now to jeopardize that.
The day is on!
I know who you are, Pony, friend of Nightbird. Jill, wife of Connor. I'm not a fool, and I have heard enough and seen enough to know you.
Have you then? And do you know enough of me to understand that I can take your life with but a thought?
Truly, you're the rogue that Dionero painted you to be.
Are we to fight then? And am I to use magic and destroy you? Or do you prefer it? Would you think it more fair if I went and retrieved my soul?
For years you have asked for the chance to fight the one named Nightbird. Your arguments have at last convinced me that Marcalo Dionero alone might bring this one to justice. When you slay Nightbird, his woman companion, and that filthy centaur beast, use Kilrani to help capture the rogues. If they resist, then kill them as well. Do not fail me in this.
I understand my role now. The calling that God brought to me when he led me to St. Mirabel and drove my body through hours of training. This hunt is the task for which Marcalo Dionero was born, and in it I shall not fail.
Very impressive. All that I would expect from the legends of Tulalafar.
Who are you? What doctor demon has arisen this time to bring grief to the world?
Demon? Why, my dear tender little elf, you could not be further from the truth. Do you not recognize Marcalo Dionero, the Bishop of Palmaris?
And thus your church names the Tulalafar as enemies?
I name anyone who befriends the outlaw Nightbird as an enemy of the church.
And so you convict and execute without trial.
That is my prerogative.
Do you think you've the power to stop this? Ad valore citatus magnus!
Don't miss R.A. Salvatore's Demon Wars Saga, Book 3, The Demon Apostle, Part 2. Available now in graphic audio.
From the author of the critically acclaimed Elantris comes a beautifully crafted tale of dark intrigue, bitter rivalries, and powerful magic. In order to save his kingdom of Idris from certain annihilation, King Dedalyn must honor a treaty made long ago. He must send his oldest daughter to marry Suzabrod, the God King of Alondrin.
War is coming, Your Majesty. They will attack.
If we send her, Yarda, we send her to her death.
Sending Vivenna is a poor plan, but it's our only plan.
Father, if we break this treaty, it will mean war. I am prepared to sacrifice for our people.
Lord God of Colors, forgive me. Vivenna, you will not go to wed the tyrant god of our enemies. I'm sending Ciri your place.
Ciri, the youngest daughter of King Dedalus, soon finds herself plunged into a world of intrigue and politics, inhabited by undead gods and zombie armies. And she quickly learns that there is a darkness spreading through the highest order of Alondrin, threatening to consume all she loves.
Vessel, doing your duty as the vessel was the danger.
You have to tell me something.
You must not bear him a child. That is the danger. This all, everything here in the palace, is not what it appears to be.
Cursed with a lecherous form of magic which causes her to feed off the souls of the living, Princess Vivenna battles to save the life of her sister and prevent the war engine of Alondrin from crushing her homeland.
Your father and Lemix were right. The Alondrin have everything to lose by not attacking you.
I'm not going to become an Awakener, Dim. I might turn a blind eye toward that lifeless for now, but I will not awaken.
In the Court of the Gods, the highest authority in all of Alondrin, Lightsong the Bold, resurrected hero of ages since past, must come to grips with his newfound immortality as he struggles to unlock the dark secret of the Pantheon of Gods and their unstoppable armies of the undead.
What do they want of me, Larimar? Do they really think I'll do it? Lightsong the Selfish. Do they really think I'd give my life for one of them?
You offer hope, Your Grace. A last unlikely hope.
And if they're wrong, I have no desire to die. And why should it be otherwise? I mean, we have to die to heal one of them. We're gods to them only until they kill us.
And the key to halting the baying hounds of war may lie in the hands of the one man who wants to watch the world burn. Vasher, the Warbreaker.
You. Are you here to frame me?
No, Vahir. I'm here to kill you.
Don't miss Brandon Sanderson's high fantasy masterpiece, Warbreaker. Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets that include 5 books of a series, available only at www.graphicaudio.net.